You are listening to an Avison On The Record podcast, brought to you by the Avison Analytics team. I am Michael Barber, and we are joined today by Matt Vallone, our Director of Research and Analysis and our resident congressional expert. Matt, welcome.
Good to be here.
Let's dive right in. The FY19 President's Budget was finally issued on February 12th. At a high level, what are the key differences this year versus FY18?
So there are a number of major differences, but the biggest of which is in both FY18 and FY19 and reflects the fact that the budget has the values included from the Bipartisan Budget Act that was passed back on the 9th. This legislation includes substantial increases in defense and non-defense discretionary spending for both FY18 and 19 that take defense spending well above the level that it was requested in the FY18 budget. FY19 takes that level even higher. So between FY17 and FY18, you'll see under the Bipartisan Budget Act a 10.7% increase in defense spending. And then in FY19, you see another significant jump, about 2% from FY18 to FY19. So at the top level, you're talking about significantly higher defense spending than what you saw in the FY18 request. In terms of other key differences, this year, unlike last year's request, has a full FYDP. So you'll have the full forecast of defense plans out to FY2023 at a project and cost element level. That sounds fairly wonky, but if you're trying to understand the low-level details of what's going on in the budget, having this forecast present is really, really instrumental in being able to dig in and see what DoD is actually planning.
Gotcha. So are there any big surprises?
Yeah, there are a number of surprises in the budget, one of which stems from the major increase in funding that you see from the previous FY17 levels in 18 and 19. Investment in ground vehicles and munitions are two areas that really, really increase in this new budget proposal relative to where they were last year. Another surprise on the flip side of that is that spending on ships and aircraft, which you normally think of as a major driver for procurement spending, only increases moderately. I think it's about 8 or 9% for both categories of spending. So it's a little bit surprising to see the ground investments get so much money, but when you think about it in the broader context of the National Defense Strategy and previous budget requests, it starts to make a little bit more sense. The previous budget requests, the Air Force and Navy had really leaned in on protecting and supporting their investment programs. So you saw significant money in the Navy in FY18 going towards shipbuilding. Similarly, the Air Force continued to make a major effort to recapitalize and focus on its major aircraft acquisitions, such as the F-35 in the FY18 request. The Army, in previous requests, had leaned towards reducing spending on investments as a way of protecting and maintaining its current force structure. Many people, myself included, thought that in a new era with a higher budget top line, the Army would seek to expand rapidly. But instead, it's chosen to expand fairly moderately within the confines of the budget and plowed a lot of money into new investment spending on upgrading existing ground systems, purchasing new ground systems, particularly the JLTV, and restocking on munitions supplies that had run fairly low. So that's one of the big surprises there. A second major surprise, at least to me, is that the FYDP maintains such a low level of growth. So you see fairly rapid increases in spending in FY18 and 19 in this plan. But after that, in a way to try to reduce the deficit impact of this proposal, the top line for defense spending only grows with inflation from FY20 to FY23. That's going to create lots of problems down in the details of the forecast, because O&M and military personnel costs are almost certainly going to continue to grow faster than inflation, and will therefore, in this plan, eat up more and more of the cost. So those years, while it's now useful to have as a planning purpose, the top line seems to me to be too low to be supportable, and probably something that will need to be revisited next year in the next release.
Interesting. So where are some of the biggest increases in defense spending?
So as I mentioned earlier, you see major increases in ground vehicle purchases and modernization. You see major increases in munitions. But really, in a scenario where the budget is rising so much and investment spending is increasing so significantly, almost every category sees major spending increases. So again, ground systems is a big winner, weapons and munitions. Space systems are not classified increase significantly, though that's a fairly small percentage of overall space spending. And lastly, C4ISR spending on programs related for C4ISR goes up significantly, reflecting a broader investment in command control functions, reconnaissance, and also increased visibility to cyber activity.
So we have a lot of different documents coming out in the beginning of the year talking about defense spending and the budget being the biggest and most important one. But before the budget came out, the National Defense Strategy was released on January 19th. So how do the allocations in the budget reflect the priorities that were set up in that defense strategy?
So it is not the perfect encapsulation of the National Defense Strategy. I think Secretary Shanahan, or Deputy Secretary Shanahan, earlier came out and said the FY20 request is going to really reflect the strategy. But you can see when you look at this budget some of the contours of what they're aiming at. So the major investments in ground systems, ground forces, munitions, and space all are areas that align fairly well with what you see in the National Defense Strategy, which is a transition to focus on peer or near-peer competitors. Space systems is a way of maintaining and protecting our dominance in space and the key C4ISR assets that our forces rely on. Ground forces is recapitalizing and gearing up to be able to be able to face off against countries like Russia and a more level playing field for ground activity and potentially in Europe. And missiles and munitions, some of that increase is going to be related to strategic deterrence and missile defense, which are two key areas for dealing with peer competitors. So in those areas, you can see the National Defense Strategy playing out. And then some of the increases in force posture and size that you see the budget allowing for also fit into this. So the Navy is on the path to expand the size of the active duty fleet. It is not currently on a trajectory to necessarily get to the 355 ships. That's a set goal. But it should see a significant increase, upwards of 300, by the end of the 10-year window from this budget, if the budget's followed by. So that meets some of the goals in the National Defense Strategy. And you do see some growth in the end strength of the Army, which is going to grow by about 2.4% by 2023, which is slightly lower than I think what we thought coming into this cycle, but still fits with the idea of preparing for near-peer competitions in multiple theaters.
So how about something that has been pretty big news over the last few years? Does the budget indicate if the third offset strategy and other innovation within DoD is still a priority?
So the term third offset doesn't show up to the same degree in documentation or in conversations that it used to. But a lot of the categories of activity that you saw in the third offset continue to be focus areas in the department. As mentioned earlier, spending on space systems increased significantly, which is a large part of what you saw in the third offset. You see spending on activities like cyber and cyber hardening, but platforms are more visible and more prevalent in the budget documentation. And other areas for things like directed energy or AI, you will see significant funding for that. It's hard to piece out at a high level what that funding will look like, but most of the areas in RDT&E go up significantly in this budget, and that will include functions like robotics, AI, and other electronic warfare activity that you would find as part of the third offset. So while the term isn't there, the areas that covers do receive attention under this budget.
Interesting. One last question. Between the recently announced Bipartisan Budget Act and the release of the President's FY19 budget request, there's the possibility for some confusion over where things stand in the government funding process. How do the BBA and the President's request interact, and what are the next steps in that process?
So the administration did coordinate with congressional negotiators on the FY19 levels for the budget with what's in the Bipartisan Budget Act. So the top lines that you see in the request are equivalent to the top lines that exist in that act. So the FY19 numbers are fairly believable. But stepping back and looking at where we are in the budget process more broadly, we unfortunately still are working through FY18 appropriations. So the Bipartisan Budget Act actually extended a continuing resolution into late March to allow appropriators to pass FY18 funding at the new higher level. And that's something that Congress is still grappling with right now. Hopefully, with the next couple of weeks, they'll be able to pass an omnibus bill setting defense and non-defense appropriations for the remainder of FY18 sometime in the next couple of weeks, so that we can then move on to consideration of the FY19 authorization appropriation process. The budget itself for the defense side, like I said, aligns with the caps set in the Bipartisan Budget Act. On the non-defense side, it does not. The administration effectively told Congress that we don't want to spend all this money and to take some of it and put it towards other uses. So there'll be some dispute over that, but that will all be hashed out in the FY19 appropriations process, which will run through till the end of September at the earliest, and likely into sometime after the midterms.
Thank you, Matt. and thank you for listening to Avicen On The Record. To make sure you don't miss our next podcast and to find previous episodes, be sure to subscribe on iTunes. You can find us on the web at avicenanalytics.com and on Twitter at avicen050. Until next time.